With such a mentality, he argued, it was natural to arm its Unionist inhabitants against their fellow countrymen while disarming the latter, and to stimulate unnatural dissensions and bigotries is therefore logical imperial policy. These he stated publicly. Privately, he wrote, it is worth noting once more that the violence evoked in this year was slight. Nor was it, this is in the South, nor was it indiscriminate or undisciplined. At no time, neither then nor subsequently, have civilians, Protestant Unionists, living scattered and isolated in the South and West, been victimized by the Republicans on account of their religion or religious opinion. His quote on the IRA is taken from that. In the document is the statement from Childers, a Protestant, on the accord between Catholics and Protestants, and it's not used. And I think it takes away from Hart's argument. By chance, Terence McSweeney was arrested a few days after the article by Childers was published. That's August 1920. As you then know, he was then on hunger strike in Brixton. In the prison, he engaged in very few external activities. He was not allowed to. But one thing he did, he was persuaded to write a preface to his book, The Principles of Freedom, which was relaunched recently with Mora here in the City Hall. And the concern he had in the preface was to put the record straight about religion. McSweeney was critical of the way in which the ancient order of Hibernians had introduced into politics a sort of Catholic Freemasonry, but he claimed that the rise of the Republican movement had brought about the fall of Hibernianism. At the present moment, he wrote, it has as little influence in the public life of Cork as Sir Edward Carson himself. The great bulk of its one-time members have now joined the Republican movement. This demonstrates clearly that anything in the nature of a sectarian movement is essentially repugnant to the Irish people. That was his view then. The statement accords with some of the general proclamation of, obviously, it accords with the proclamation of 1916, the constitution of Republican Sinn Féin in 1917, and the various proclamations of Dáil Éireann in January 1919. His book was published in America in 1921, January. And I'll end with this section. In the same month, an organisation which is not widely known, the Irish White Cross, was founded, and it fully reflected and respected his ideals. The work of the White Cross had no religious barriers. Catholic bishops cooperated with the Church of Ireland bishops, the chief rabbi of Dublin participated, as did ministers of the Methodist Church. Many lay people of Protestant churches, such as George Russell, James Douglas, Lionel Smith Gordon, and Mary Childers, Erskine's wife, joined the executive, despite it being said that the funds would be used in the Sinn Féin interest, as Michael Collins was a trustee. This charge was rebutted by James Douglas, a Quaker, who declared that both before and after the truce, no trustee was more jealous of the truly non-party character of relief than Michael Collins. Taking all these signs together of cooperation, and despite the many testimonies to religious toleration, the killing by the IRA of 10 Protestants in the Dunmanway area of West Cork, not far from Bandon, is completely out of character. And yet, that particular incident is used by Peter Hart to show that the Republican movement was sectarian. He writes, these men, this is April 22, were shot because they were Protestants. I'll say a little bit about this with Meda Ryan in the hall here. She probably should be saying this, but anyway. He maintains the fact of the victim's religion is inescapable. They were shot because they were Protestants. Now, Meda Ryan, in her recent book on Tom Barry, has tackled this particular problem comprehensively. Her contention is that the men were killed because they were informers to the army and police, and not because they were Protestants. She lists known loyalist groupings, such as the Loyalist Action Grouping and the Anti-Sinn Féin Society. She relates the formal army instructions on the need for intelligence from the official record of the rebellion, and she itemizes the instructions of General Strickland in January 21 to set up vigilance committees to assist in intelligence work. And she provides accounts of the intelligence files from the diary and documents that K Company of the Auxiliaries left at Dunmanway. This document, known as the Black and Tan Diary, is very important. The details, minute details, provided on IRA suspects indicate they were provided by people from within the local community. The case that Meade O'Ryan makes for the Dunmanway killings as being directed against loyalist informers rather than Protestants is compelling. It is strengthened by contemporary evidence, which she produces, from both Protestants and IRA men alike, which bore witness to generally good relations between Catholics and Protestants. She has provided similar evidence from Lionel Curtis, one of Lloyd George's advisers on the Constitution. The killings, it should be stressed, took place at a time when the IRA was divided following the treaty, but by the terms of the truce of 11th of July 21, it was forbidden to engage in military activities. The IRA command in Cork, as Meade O'Ryan makes clear, condemned the killings, as did both pro-treaty and anti-treaty parties in Dáil-Éireann. Credibility in Hart's argument is impaired by his use of the source material contained in the record of the rebellion in the 6th Divisional Area. In a review of his book in 1998, I pointed out that Hart, quoting from the record, maintained that, quotation, "the truth was that as British intelligence officers recognised, in the South the Protestants and those who supported the government rarely gave much information, because except by chance they had not got it to give." If that was really the case, then Hart's position would certainly be strengthened. The next two sentences, however, from the official record, tell a completely different story, and Hart has chosen not to publish them. They read, "An exception to this rule was in the Bandon area, where there were many Protestant farmers who gave information. Although the intelligence officer of this area was an exceptionally experienced, and although the troops were most active, it proved almost impossible to protect those brave men, many of whom were murdered, while almost all the remainder suffered grave material loss." In short, the evidence from this British source confirms that the IRA killings in the Bandon, Dunmanway area were motivated by political military considerations and not by sectarian ones. To compound the issue, Hart has chosen to evade rather than to address this misuse of source material. When, as editor of the Record of the Rebellion in 2002, he published the full text, including these two sentences, but made no reference to the fact that he had omitted the two significant sentences in his earlier book. Instead, in a footnote, he refers to his treatment of the theme and observes that, quotation, "some condemned West Cork Protestants did give or tried to give information, but there is no evidence that they acted en masse despite the statement." The reviewer in the Irish Times, while praising Hart's assessment of the documents, remarks that he appears disingenuous on one point. In response to Hart's claim that there is no evidence that Protestants acted en masse, the reviewer comments, "but is this report not the evidence?" The conclusion is this: from the tenor of the tour, I think one can come make two conclusions, one in regards to British policy and the other in regards to the IRA. In regard to British policy in Ireland, the verdict of the coroner's jury on Thomas McCurtain on the 17th of April 1920, 2 days coming as the 85th anniversary, it symbolises and endorses the primacy of government policy as the fundamental cause of the conflict. Most of you here will know the verdict. The verdict read, "We find the murder was organised and carried out by the IRIC, officially directed by the British government, and return a verdict of willful murder against David Lloyd George, Prime Minister of England, Lord French, Lord Lieutenant, Ian Macpherson, late Chief Secretary, and various IRIC officials." In relation to the IRA, Florence O'Donoghue, in his summary of the lives of McCurtain, McSweeney and O'Hagerty, in words that would apply to many other IRA men, wrote, all three had come from the people, and specifically from that small surviving section of the people which had, through all the long story of bitter servitude, preserved its historical memory and its old conception of national freedom. Behind each was an unbroken tradition of culture, of human dignity, of a heritage from the past, and of the imprescriptible right of their people to freedom. Thank you for listening patiently.
That was most interesting. I'm sure that every single one of us here have learned much as a result of that talk. I certainly have. Now, the rest of the programme is as follows. We will now have the film of Michael Collins. And after that, then, if anybody has any particular questions about Father Murphy's talk, I'm sure he'll be able to deal with a few questions. We'll have time enough for that. Now, Ithar and Darling, those of you at the back there, there are seats here, and I'd say you really need to come near if you want to make sure that you see the film. The screen won't be that big. The Irish and Australia, the Paxos and so on, Master Faber.